Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is the Coast Coast Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Fitch, and today we're going to talk about NBA playoffs, a little Major League Baseball in the end, and maybe a little NHL hockey, because I watched one of the great, all-time great series between the Pittsburgh Penguins and Washington Capitals. It's a great series. I'm going to talk about that later. But first I want to talk about the Toronto-Miami Heat series in the Eastern Conference semifinals, where Miami won 103-91 in a desperate game. Goran Dragic was great. Now, Toronto came out early and hung in there tough. Guys like Ross, who had 6 points, played, started out well, didn't end well. But McRoberts was big. See, Miami needed help other than Dwayne Wade, who was fantastic, who had a big game with 23 points, 5 assists, 3 blocks, and 2 steals. Wade did what he was supposed to do, but then they got help, Goran Dragic, who was big, and he had his jumper going. Winslow played well. Winslow's important because he's got to shoot it a little bit decent because he's such a good defender. You know, Kyle Lowry kept him in the game by just driving. He's tormented the Heat with his ability to get to the basket at will. But Dragic was important. He had 30 points, but the key for him, he was hitting his jump shot, and that was big. And you know Wade is going to be Wade because he hit threes. He hasn't hit threes all year, but in the playoffs he's done it. And that's D. Wade. He's an assassin, and he was trying to get this game to game 7. Lowry was trying to. He had a shot to make it with 6. But with under 6 minutes left, Miami just took over the game. Wade making blocks, making crossover moves, driving to the basket with his left hand. He was just doing it all. And Miami was able to finish off the Toronto Raptors and do what they had to do to force the Game 7. I'm going to tell you something. Wade, this is a one-game series, and really, it's supposed to favor Toronto at Jurassic Park. You're going to see the fans out there at Jurassic Park all excited. And you're going to see Drake, and that the fan base is going to be fired up. They're going to be ready. They're going to be ready to go. They're going to be ready to put the Heat away. But this is the key. Dwayne Wade wants to get this game, to get to his buddy for game 1. He wants to get to Cleveland and play against LeBron James. And this is what he's always wanted. Now, I'm going to get to who I think Cleveland wants. But the key to get to Cleveland for the Heat is Dragic's got to shoot his jump shot. He's got to make his jumper. He can't turn the ball over because in Toronto he had a key turnover down 3 late with about a minute and change to go, and you can't do that. And you have to keep Kyle Lowry in front of you. The takeaway, I mean, if he's making a couple of threes, you may have to just deal with that. But you have to, and they have to dig in hard. When Kyle Lowry turns the corner off of a screen, the help has to come as hard as it's ever come the entire series. They did it against Kemba Walker in Game 7 where they really worked hard. The Whiteside was there blocking shot. So they're going to need McRoberts to come in there and head off the pass. And I would put Winslow. I would switch off and put Dragic when Winslow's in the game. Put Dragic on Ross and maybe have Winslow out there on Lowry. And he's better at really using his strength because Lowry's strong and taking that penetration away. Like, DeRozan's going to get his pull-up jump shots. You're just going to have to live with that. You take some of his airspace away to make some of the jumpers difficult, but DeRozan's going to do what he – you have to keep him from driving too, but Lowry you got to because he'll drive and draw the foul or he'll kick it out to an open three-point shooter and you're in trouble. I think what you're going to have to do is lay off Bismarck Biyombo. You're going to have to rotate over to make sure that you box out, and that's another thing that the Heat have to do. They must box out. They must figure out how to box out Patterson, keep him from back-tapping the ball and giving Toronto extra possessions because you don't want to give Lowry and DeRozan extra possessions because that's going to be your recipe of going home for the playoffs, and you'll be done. For the Raptors, they need Kyle Lowry to be Kyle Lowry. Just keep driving and tormenting and hurting the Heat like you've done all series. DeRozan to be big in the fourth quarter. They need another guy. They need another guy to perform. They need Roth to play big at home, or Patterson to hit a couple of threes, Corey Joseph. They're going to need that other guy to be in order to beat the Heat, and then let DeRozan and Lowry take over in the fourth quarter. Because if it's a close in fourth quarter, DeRozan and Lowry are piggyback off each other. For the Heat, it'll be Wade, but Wade's going to need that second guy. If you have two guys in Toronto scoring and being big, you need that second guy to be the star, and that's the Goran Dragic. Dragic has to be big, and their ball movement has to be good. But Toronto shoots the gap a lot to try to get steals and to try to just force you. They chase Lave off the three-point line. They've done that really good. But Dang is going to have to be strong. He may have to shoot a couple of threes in the faces of some of the Toronto players. And the key for Toronto is to pound the glass like he's done all series. Do exactly what you've been doing. They just didn't make shots to help Lowry. But if they make shots and he cannot stop Lowry from just driving, just parading to the basket, then they'll win game seven. And that's the key. Watch how the Heat react to Lowry's penetration, can get defensive rebound. If they do that, they're going to win. If they don't, they're going to lose. That requires maximum effort. You must sell out completely on defense if you are the Miami Heat. If you're Toronto, you just have to play your game. But the Heat have to take it to a higher level to get this one. Because road teams don't win on road teams usually don't win game seven. You have the Knicks here. The Knicks have done it quite a few times. They did it years ago against Boston, 73. They did it against the Heat a couple of times, maybe three times. If I'm going to check, you know, the Allen Houston famous shot that rattled in, Alonzo Mourning getting ejected the game before and then not being there, they lost. Trying to think who else. There was a couple other teams that won game seven. The last time a Washington sports team other than the Redskins won, 79, they won a road game in game seven. It's just hard to get it done. That was the 76ers, where the ghost of Boston passed, and they were trying to intimidate the Sixers because they had blew the year before. And Dr. J and Andrew Tony came in there and destroyed Boston in 82 in game seven. It's just not I don't have a lot of references. It's just going to be very difficult. That crowd is going to be loud. That whole continent of Canada is anticipating and winning. Now, if you're Cleveland, you've been resting. I heard you've been partied at Kevin Love's house, and they're getting ready. If I'm Cleveland, I'd prefer Toronto. It's not even close. I don't want to go. I don't want anything to deal with South Beach just because of the fact that I just think LeBron James has an aura about him in the Eastern Conference, and I think that there's a little bit of an intimidation factor because his size is larger than life kind of persona, and he can intimidate teams. He will not intimidate the Miami Heat because he used to play for the Heat, and the Heat are just – it's a different mantra and a way they go about their business. Now, of course, they probably have a little more talent than the Heat, but the Heat have the mentality to play a Cleveland because they're going to be playing Cleveland looking to try to beat Cleveland. Toronto, I just believe if they get there, they're happy to be there. We finally got to the conference final. And Cleveland, they're going to be times where Cleveland will mop the floor up with Toronto. Toronto kind of plays a little street ball with Lowry and DeRozan. That will not work against Cleveland. And at times they've left a couple shooters open, and Miami didn't take advantage of it. Cleveland would light the Toronto Raptors up with Fry and Love and Irvin from the outside. They would beat them. I would give the Raptors a game. Miami, I just think the Miami would really push the Cavaliers, if not even outright beat them, if Hassan Whiteside is healthy. Because Whiteside is a difference maker. Cleveland's not big, and Whiteside has dealt with Valanciunas and Al Jefferson. He's got nothing in the middle against Cleveland. If he's healthy, he would have to be healthy for them to beat Cleveland if they got that far. But Wade, in the fourth quarter, that's a problem. I'd rather deal with Kyle Lowry and DeRozan, who have no experience, than a hungry assassin like Wade, who has no fear of Cleveland and no fear of his friend LeBron. And then LeBron, psychologically, I saw him check out of games of Miami. Of course, he can't afford to do that in the playoffs. But psychologically, I just wonder. Now, he said, oh, I love the play, Wade. Yeah, don't pay no attention to that. In his heart of heart, it would be a lot better and less pressure to beat up on Toronto, which they would do easily. I know it's a no-brainer if you're Cleveland. If you're a Cleveland fan or players, you're sitting there with rooting, with your Toronto pom-poms on, rooting hard, very hard for the Toronto Raptors to win that. Now, that's the Eastern Conference. Now I'm going to talk about the Western Conference. OKC just annihilated the San Antonio Spurs. Before the series started, I said I had a feeling OKC would beat San Antonio. And in my heart, I said, OKC's going to get them. I just feel like Russell and Durant, this is their time to get to the conference finals. After game one, that shook me a little bit. I said, well, maybe the Spurs are going to get them. And OKC, they could be stupid at times. I'm going to be honest. And they could make mindless turnovers like they did in game three. But they responded in game four. Durant went clean off in front of his mama. That jump-started them. They really outplayed the Spurs. I know there was a couple calls, but they outplayed the Spurs in game two and five, and they earned those wins. I know that Russell could have got fouled, and they didn't call it. But who's to say San Antonio would even have made a three? And what Billy Donovan did, which was awesome, was make adjustments on Aldridge, particular. And I didn't think Aldridge would score 40 points a game the whole series. He's not built like that's not his kind of deal. He had 18 in the losing effort, and they just took his right away and made him shoot left-handed. And he made some shots left-handed, but he's uncomfortable. I mean, you're making a guy do something he doesn't want to do, and I thought that was a tremendous adjustment by Billy Donovan. And OKC was Adams played great. 15 points, 11 rebounds, and he was that third guy they needed. Cantor was good, 7 points. And then Deion Waiters, he was his defense on Kawhi Leonard, just slowed him down enough to realize. And Kawhi Leonard was the only hope for the Spurs because a lot of guys are aging, and they got old. And people said, oh, they won all those regular season games. That means nothing. When they got to the playoffs, sometimes you just age, and old age comes on you in a hurry. And it came on the Spurs, and I think the run is up for a little while until they add players to go along with Aldridge and Leonard. But I think time is up for a little while for the Spurs. And now we get to the Thunder and the Golden State Warriors. This is going to be, for however long it lasts, it is going to be fun. Because of the fact that you've got Westbrook versus Stephen Curry. And I just want to say before I get into this, Stephen Curry, forget anything LeBron said. Stephen Curry is the true MVP. He was the leader on the team that won 73 games. He's a champion. He came back better than he ever did. He's a tremendous passer. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the history of the sport. And he's the biggest big-game shooter in the league. He's the best clutch player in the league. I get that LeBron does a lot of the little stat stuffers. I get that. But he didn't shoot it as good as he did in the past. And Curry is the legitimate MVP. And if anybody has a problem with that, they could call in at 646-564-9874. Anytime during the playoffs you want to debate me about that, that's fine. But I will tell you this. Know what you're talking about. Don't call and make a fool of yourself. Steph Curry is the true MVP. Let's just get that out of the way before I get into the series. Now, this series, OKC's going to give Golden State a lot of trouble. This is a matchup because athletically, they're going to want to they run up and down the court like Golden State. Now, Golden State likes that style. So, I mean, Golden State's going to be comfortable playing. But I'm going to tell you, if OKC has any shot, they have to thoroughly out-rebound Golden State badly. They have to be like one of those 40-24 kind of deals and get a bunch of Adams and Cantor have to just pound the boards, and they have to shoot the gap when Russell Westbrook drives to the basket. Westbrook cannot make mindless turnovers. He's going to be aggressive and great and do what he has to do and be difficult, and his motor is running. So even when they're losing, he just keeps coming and coming and coming. That's going to bode well for them in this series. But they're going to need a third guy, Ibaka, the hip shot. Ibaka can't disappear. You know, for Golden State, this is what they need. Curry has to be his MVP self, because the other day against Portland, he had 17 points in the fourth in the overtime when he came back and had 40 points overall in that big game three, that swing game. And then he had hilariously tough shots in the game five. And Portland, wow, give them credit. Lillard and McCullough is amazing backcourt. They're the second best backcourt in the NBA to go along with Curry and Thompson, because Klay Thompson big time in the last series. And he's got to be big time hitting usual big shots, because Curry likes to penetrate and kick it out to him. And he hits three. He hits daggers that make – and what Golden State does, they hit big threes, and the leads will go from 2 to 20 in a hurry. And Bogut has to – Bogut and Mo Spates play well as far as getting the rebound and boxing OKC out, because OKC killed the Spurs on the board. And they want to – for them to get their transition game going, they're going to have to do that. And Mo Spates is hitting threes. So now the whole floor is spread. When you have five guys that can hit threes, if you have Barnes, Bates, Iguodala, Klay Thompson, and Curry all on the floor at the same time, all three of them can shoot threes, and that's spread way out. You got to come out and guard. Now the back door is open, which they do better than any team in the league. And they can drive, and they can kick out, and they can swing the ball. That's a nightmare. And OKC can't miss assignments like they did against the Spurs, where Westbrook is looking at Adams like, you had him. No, I had him. Well, you can't do that against Golden State, or you'll get beat, and you'll get beat soundly. But I think OKC's got the confidence to compete with Golden State. They could go into Golden State and get a game, and then it could be – I think it's going to be 7, and it's going to be tight. And Curry and Thompson will figure out a way to get Golden State back to the NBA Finals. That's my fearless prediction. But that's going to be fun to watch up and down. Both crowds are loud. And then you got Andre Robertson is a great defensive player on OKC. Maybe they put him on Curry with his long arm. And Deion Waiters on Klay Thompson. It's going to be very fascinating, because Donovan is going to try to make he's showing that he can make adjustments on the fly, which is good. You know, and they also play one of the great games, February 27th, overtime games that I saw. It's going to be a great series. Curry's healthy. Everybody on OKC's healthy. You know, you got Katie going to be making big shots. You got Iguodala, who's sneaky, tough in pressure situations, the MVP of the last year's finals. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Now I want to talk about hockey. The Pittsburgh Penguin Capital Series was so good. And it was back and forth. The Penguins won their home games. They split. They stole game one, which really won the series. They lost in game two. Actually, they stole game one, lost game two, took care of 3 and 4 at home, tight games, overtime. And then Capitals squeak out game 5, and they're trying to get back to game 7. And the Penguins beat the Capitals 4-3 to win the series. And it was action-packed and tense. Both crowds were in it. I was riveted to my seat. It was just a great series. And it wasn't about Sidney Crosby and Ovechkin. It was other guys like Oshie on the Capitals. The hero of all heroes, believe it or not, is a former New York Ranger who played on my team, didn't play as good under pressure, but now he's on the Penguins and he's playing good under pressure. And that would be Carl Hagelin, who had 4 goals in the series and had a goal in the deciding game. And they move on, and they lost to Tampa in game 1. I don't know if it's a hangover, but Tampa's best goalie, Ben Bishop, got hurt. I don't know if he's out for the series or not. So that's going to be an interesting series. And Tampa was in the finals last year, and they're trying to get back. So it's going to be very, very interesting in the NHL. And I really, really enjoyed that series and hoping that the Penguins in Tampa is just as good. Can Sidney Crosby get another championship? It's always good to have one, but when you get a second one, it kind of validates you. Like when Peyton Manning got the second one in football this year. Now, Major League Baseball, I'm looking. The Orioles are still the Orioles. They're in first place. A Bucks got them playing good at 22-12. Boston's playing good because their offense is solid. And their young guys, Mookie Betts and those guys are good. Toronto's asleep. I think Toronto's going to make a run. They might make a trade to get another pitcher. They're going to be proactive. I think they're going to be solid. Sports is good right now in Toronto because you have the Raptors playing good and the Blue Jays are good. So that's – and the fan base is really rabid out there. The White Sox are surprising everybody, but they probably have the best pitcher in all baseball, Chris Sale, who wore the Yankees out yesterday 7-1. They're 24-12, and they're playing big-time baseball. Baseball is back in Chicago. Cleveland is solid. I'm going to have Matt Lode on to get more information on the Indians. I always admired Tito Francona, and they were patient, and now the young players are good. They don't have enough hitting for me. And the Royals are doing a hangover, but I'm not giving up on the Royals yet. They're under 500 now. And the West, please. Nobody knows. The West is not. It's going to take the end of the year for the West to be decided between the Mariners, Rangers, A's. I even believe the Astros at 15-22 will make a little bit of a run. They're too talented. And the Angels. And then nationally, the Nationals and the Mets play this week. And the Mets have been beat up a little bit on the road. But I'm going to and let me tell you, before I get into that, Max Scherzer, 20 strikeouts against his former team. And it looked personal because he was striking guys out, and it looked like he was gritting his teeth like, you guys didn't want me? I'll show you. He was striking Cabrera out, making everybody in that pretty good lineup look silly. But he's playing against the Mets, and I'm going to make a prediction that the Mets get to him. I think the Mets are going to wear him out, and the Mets are going to wear the Nationals out. I just think psychologically the Mets just are better. Now, watch out for Daniel Murphy to kind of try to spoil the Mets a little bit, but I just believe they're going to figure out a way to beat the Nationals and end up in first place by next Saturday when I talk about them on my show. The Cubs are 26-8 and rolling. I'd like to see them get another pitcher, but we'll see how the season goes. And the Dodgers and Giants are just going to fight each other. I just come to that conclusion that it's going to come down to those two teams. And who makes the trade at the deadline? Does the Dodgers just sit back and not get another pitcher or maybe another hitter and let the Giants out-hustle them? We'll see. Monday, I'm going to look to have Andrew Flohr on to talk Golden State basketball.